Wonderful. Great. This is module two of using social media for your life coach business. And my name is Tracy Ray. I have my own social media company where I manage social media pages for coaches just like yourselves and small businesses. And my name is Tracy, and I'm just so excited to be on this call. We're really going to get down to some nitty-gritty stuff here in this module. And because there's so much to cover tonight, I am going to really just go for the jugular and start right in. So the first thing I want you to do is to make sure that you have something to write with or have your computer open so that you can take some notes and jot down your questions, because after each section, I'm going to stop and take a break and open the lines for questions. So you'll have at least two opportunities for questions, probably three opportunities if this goes the way I planned it, to ask questions. So take notes, and you also have a PDF document that was sent to you to refer to. If you don't have that, don't panic. I'm going to just say things in such a way that I think you'll be able to take notes, and I can always email that to you afterwards. There's some reference material at the very end of it that you'll want to have, so let's just go ahead and get started. I'm going to start with the most important takeaway for this evening. Like I said, I'm going straight for the jugular. On page two of your PDF, what you're going to see there is the four-pronged approach to using social media to build your online presence. These four things will give you the foundation that you need to build a strong presence online. So with this kind of foundation, you're good to go. And that four-pronged approach is, number one, a website. If you don't have a website, you need one. Number two, a social platform. If you don't use a social platform yet, pick one and get started. Number three is a blog. If you don't have a blog on your website, get one. And number four is a mailing list. And if you don't have a mailing list, start one. So look, you don't and you won't understand every single thing there is to know about social media because it's constantly changing. And there's just so much to take in. And even people like me who do it all the time, we are constantly learning because it's always changing and people are always building on to the next latest, greatest, most wonderful thing. So my advice to you, and I want you to hear this loud and clear, is jump in somewhere, even if you're not ready, because you'll never really be ready. So jump in somewhere. My hope is after this module, you'll have a good idea which social network to start with, and maybe even have in your mind another one that you'll want to add a little bit further down the road. Because I do think that you'll probably want to use more than one social network like Facebook in conjunction with Twitter or in conjunction with LinkedIn and so forth. So with a website, blog, at least one social network, and a growing mailing list, you'll have a solid foundation upon which to build a strong online presence. And I want you to keep this in your mind as the formula that we're using going forward in this module. This approach is really just using four things as your foundation, and yet I know it's still overwhelming. I mean, there's wheels turning right now with some of you who are thinking, gosh, I don't even have a website yet, and I don't even know where to start. And I totally get that. So before you let any overwhelm take hold at all, hear me say this. If you don't yet have a website, building one is easier than it has ever been, and hiring it done is cheaper than it's ever been. So you got this. You could literally be 1 week away from having a functioning website. When it comes down to a social platform, even if you've never used Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn or anything before, picking one like Facebook or Twitter is about finding out which one will work best as a starting point for your coaching practice. Now, that's just a little bit of research, and after this module, you may know exactly which one you want to pick. So you got this. Blogging is about sharing your expertise. Look, you know your stuff already. So the challenge here is to discipline yourself to write blog articles on a regular basis. And even if you don't know how to best use keywords, or even if you don't know what I mean when I say keywords, just start writing ideas down for future posts. And keep a running list with you everywhere you go to jot things down as they come to your mind. You know your field of expertise, so you've got this. A mailing list is about choosing an email service provider like MailChimp or GetResponse and setting up an opt-in form to capture email addresses. Now, we're not going to tackle that topic tonight, but I assure you, you got this too. It's not hard to do, and you don't have to think about this part immediately anyway. You just need to know that a mailing list is in your future. You're going to have one, and we'll tackle that in another module. It's just something to know as part of the four-pronged approach that you're going to need that. In this module, I'm going to go deeper into numbers 2 and 3 on this four-pronged approach, picking a social media platform and blogging. Now, I'm doing this because even if you don't have a website yet, you can still jump right into using social media by using the social network, and you can start blogging or at the least mapping out a blogging plan and listing out topics that you want to write on in the future when your blog is up and going. So that's why I'm starting where I'm starting. Even though I'm not tackling the topic of websites in this module, I'll start by saying just a couple things about websites. And then we'll take a quick couple minutes to maybe ask some questions. But I'll be doing a module that goes into depth in the near future on websites. But as I said, if you don't have one, you need one. So really quickly on this topic, I personally build sites using WordPress. There is a learning curve with WordPress, and it's kind of a big one. I use it because of its versatility and ability to do heavy lifting. I mean, there's really almost nothing you can't throw at a WordPress website that it can't handle. There are drop-and-drag website builders like Wix, which you've probably heard of. They're becoming much more popular as more do-it-yourselfers are out there wanting to do it themselves. And you can do a Wix website yourself. You really can. Even if you really think you can't, you really can. It's literally a drop and drag. I suggest, though, that you research a little bit to unearth the pros and cons of building a site on Wix or any other drop and drag website builder, though, because there are often some limitations, and depending on what it is you want to do on your site, those limitations really might matter. And real quickly, for one thing, you need to be sure that your website can support a shopping cart if you plan on accepting payments or selling a product like an ebook. Now, most website builders can, but you need to check because some do have limitations. Another consideration is hosting. Your website has to live somewhere because it's massive amounts of files, and your home computer cannot handle it. So you need a place for your website to live. That's why they call it hosting. It's just like having somebody stay at a hotel when they're visiting your hometown if you don't have room in your house for them. It's the same concept. Your website has to have a place to live. Using Wix as an example, it's a self-hosted site builder. It's a turnkey operation. So you go to Wix. They host your site. You buy your domain from there. You build your site or you hire them to build it, and you pay a monthly fee for them to host your site. Now, I'm not sure about the pricing of Wix. I've played around with it. My friend built her website on Wix, and she let me go into the back end of it and play around with it. And it really is drop and drag, and it really is super simple. But I'm not a Wix expert. I'm a WordPress chick. So if you go that route, you just want to do your research for building it yourself. It's doable, but you want to do a little research first. If you were to build or have built a WordPress site, you'd need to buy hosting for the site. And in most cases, you buy hosting for a year at a time, which is roughly in the neighborhood of $100 a year. You need to purchase your domain name if you don't already have one, and privacy protection, which is another like $20-ish dollars, and a theme for your site, which actually drives the look and functionality of your site. And this can range anywhere from free to several hundreds of dollars. If you don't have a site, don't let this make you squirm one bit. As I said, websites are easier than ever built, and they're easier than ever to afford, And if you need help, you can consult with me to get you headed in the right direction. My contact information is at the end of this PDF document, along with some other tips and important and valuable resources, and we'll look at that at the very end. Now, because I'm just touching base with websites, I'm not really digging deep into it. I just want to give a few minutes for anybody out there who has basic questions about a website before we move on. So unmute yourself and go ahead and ask a question, and we'll move through this part. Okay, so I'm guessing no one has any questions, and I just scrolled through the questions emailed to me previously, and I don't see anything about a website in here. So we'll just note this. We're going to tackle websites and websites alone in another module in the coming months. So if that's something you need to know more about, or if you want to know sooner, you can contact me about that. Okay, so enough about websites now. Let's move to number two on our four-pronged approach. Using a social platform. Now, to make an informed decision about where you should be spending your time online, you need to answer the question on page three. Where does my target market hang out online? Is it Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, LinkedIn, some other network? You have a target market, so what platform do they use? The answer is critical for the obvious reason. Understanding your target and the platforms they use means that you can show up to the party. It's just that simple. So you're going to have to do a little bit of research to match up the best platform for your particular coaching practice. I'm really not talking about mountains of research here. I'm talking about an hour or two of some Google madness, some of which I've done right here in this module, and I'll show you in a minute. By the time that we're done with this, you may not even feel that you need to dig a whole lot further. You may feel like you know exactly which platform you want to start with. In my own research, even just in recent, just last few days of doing research for my own purposes, I uncovered a few important and very fresh bits of information from Pew Research, a very well-respected source for social media stats. And I picked out seven interesting pieces of information, although there's tons more than that. But I wanted to just go over the seven that I found to illustrate the kinds of information you need to look for when doing your own research and why it is that you need to know this stuff. So I'm going to tell you this very short list of seven stats and why this should interest you as a coach to help you kind of connect these dots when you do your own research. So on page four, here are the seven most recent things I found. Pinterest is dominated by women. Now, you should note this if your demographic is female, because women are four times more likely to be Pinterest users than men. And if your target is young moms or stay-at-home moms, household managers, you might want to research this platform further. It may not be your starting point. Especially if you're not using anything at all, it may not be your starting point. But if your demographic falls within that parameter, you're going to want to dig into Pinterest possibly at some point in the future. Number two is a very interesting statistic. Facebook is aging. 45% of Internet users age 65 plus use Facebook. And this should interest you, of course, if your target market falls into that age category. Facebook was once thought of as a college kid thing. That's what Mark Zuckerberg created it to be. But that's really not the dominating demographic on Facebook now. It's always changing, always changing, always changing. But for right now, that's a really great place if your demographic is in perhaps my age bracket. I'm 50-something. So that's a really great thought for you. Most people, number three, aren't using multiple social networks. Over 50% of Internet users either don't use any social networks at all or they just use one, and it's Facebook. Now, this is of interest to you because in order to have a well-rounded social media strategy that reaches more of your target, you'll want to work toward using several platforms at one time, the platforms that your target uses. For instance, if your target is found on Twitter and Facebook, after you've done research, you find that out, it's important for you to note that most Twitter users aren't Facebookers, and most Facebookers aren't Twitter users. There is some crossover. I'm an example, but I'm also in the business. But most people who are really, really crazy about Twitter, they just do Twitter. That's just what they do, and that's all they do. So by using both, you're potentially reaching a broader span of your demographic. So that's something to think about as you progress. You're going to want to start with one because one's what you can handle. But consider, after you do your research, adding the next most appropriate, best-fitting network. Number four, Facebook and Instagram users are the most engaged. Around 60% of their users sign in every single day compared to 46% of Twitter users, and they interact when they get there. They aren't as passive as some are on other networks. And this should interest every coach, really, because you know full well coaching is all about engagement. It's all about engagement, which is one reason social media makes so much sense for coaches and why Facebook in particular makes sense. Now, I'm not suggesting Instagram. It's really just a part of this statistic because it's a little bit interesting. I'm not suggesting it because Instagram is mostly a visual sharing tool that teenagers are just like rabid dogs all around it right now, and I just don't think it's going to be the best fit for most coaches. There's always an exception somewhere, but for the most part, that just wouldn't be what I would suggest. But Facebook, absolutely, you should probably use. I could say that I would probably advise almost everybody on this call to use Facebook. And that leads us into number five. Almost all social networkers use Facebook. In fact, over 80% of other social network users also use Facebook. And this is important if you're just starting out and if you want to begin with only one platform, which is what I suggest you do if you are just starting out and you're not sure where to start. I'm saying that Facebook, I believe, would be a very great place for almost any coach to start. Number six, Pinterest and LinkedIn are standalone networks. Now, this is interesting. There's not a lot of crossover usage with other networks except for Facebook. And this should interest you because if your coaching practice targets entrepreneurs specifically, as a primary B2B network, LinkedIn would be a smart place to begin, and depending on your target, it may be the place to begin, especially if your target market is men in business, because men dominate LinkedIn. After you get going on LinkedIn, you might want to consider then adding Facebook, or starting with Facebook, but plan on adding LinkedIn very quickly if your demographic falls in there. Pinterest and LinkedIn users, number seven, are wealthier than other networks with a high percentage earning over $75,000. And this might interest you if you coach those in a wealthier demographic. So I want to focus on Facebook for just a minute since it's the most likely best fit for almost everybody on this call. I'm not going to go dig deep into any stats about Facebook users other than to say this one thing. If your demographic is anywhere in the age of 25 to 65, Facebook is a clear starting point for you using social media for your practice because it is the number one most popular and most used social network right now. So for most of us, Facebook is a safe social network starting bet, and it's likely that no matter who your target is, a good number of your peeps are already using Facebook. And a lot of you are already using Facebook too, which is another really good reason to start there. Now, while Facebook may be the best starting point for you, I want to make an observation that I hope will open you up to the concept of adding another social network once you have Facebook going. And really, you're likely going to need to add at least one more platform in order to have the broad reach that you want for your coaching practice. So I just want to take young mothers as an example to explore another network. Young mothers, they're on Pinterest en masse. They're also on Facebook in large numbers. And on top of that, there are a huge number of young moms who consistently use Twitter. But they're not all the same moms. And my personal experience would suggest that young moms on Twitter tend to be more politically or socially minded, like green or environmentally minded or community minded. And often these young moms on Twitter are entrepreneurs as well, with small businesses, often businesses out of their home. On the other hand, Pinterest moms appear to mostly be stay-at-home moms who love to shop, cook, fawn over baby, and fiddle around on the internet. Now, it could be possibly summed up like this. Twitter moms are out there in the community doing stuff. Pinterest moms are poking around on the internet sharing stuff. Now, I want to add this little teeny thing just to cover my bum. These are gross generalities that I'm making. Terribly broad brushstroke here. But it's kind of necessary given the huge numbers of people that I'm trying to categorize for you. Of course there are tons of exceptions. This is really just my personal observation after using these platforms regularly, daily, for several years. My observation becomes very helpful to coaches like you if you are a coach who targets young moms who are community-minded, interested in volunteerism, green-minded, or operating their own business. Because if you are coaching in that demographic, I'm going to advise you to hop on the Twitter train really quick because that's a great platform to couple with Facebook. As you can see from just what I've said so far, knowing what your target audience is doing and where they're found online is going to be enormously helpful for you to make an informed decision on where to begin. And the Young Moms is really just a great example of how personal experience, as far as I'm concerned, has shown me who these people are because I have a young mom as a client. And that's why we researched together where it would be a good starting point for her. And research showed us that these were the places that they were. But I want to say this. I would rather see you jump in and start somewhere on any platform, anywhere, even if it's not the best fit, than to see you do nothing at all with social media. Because everybody's using social media, and when people go to your website, they expect to see social buttons to find you in those places. So it comes down to this, no matter how convinced you may be at this point with Facebook, in the end, you're probably going to need to or want to add at least one more network because your target market is hanging out in other places too, and they may be there in huge quantities. But there's another really important, very personal and practical point to consider when landing on which platform to start or to even add later. You need to take into consideration whether or not you'll actually use the platform. Now, you have to be honest with yourself. If you already have a Facebook page, but you hate it and rarely log on to it, you find it baffling or confusing or frustrating, then you're already facing an uphill battle, and you'd really better off hiring someone to manage that page so that you can spend your time doing what you love. Otherwise, you'll just abandon it out of frustration or boredom or whatever it is that's eating you about that platform. So I'm going to stress this point again. I'd rather see you being somewhere, even if it's not the best fit for you, than to see you not using any social network at all. So if you hate Facebook but you love Twitter, I'd rather see you hop on Twitter and start going crazy with Twitter for your business and either hire someone to do Facebook or go find a way to fall in love with it. You know, just by using any platform on a regular, consistent basis, you learn tons about social media overall. I mean, it helps you gain confidence, and it helps you gain knowledge and understanding so that when you do find the right platform, you're ahead of the game because you've used other platforms. And they're not all the same. No, they're not. But you learn a lot about social media on every single one of them. Now, Twitter is a great example of this. Twitter may be the hub for your demographic. And if that's the case, you'll need to dive in and begin understanding it and using it at some point. But if you've never used it before, you need to know going in that it's going to take you about 6 weeks or so of consistent usage before the light's going to go on for how it can work to your advantage for your business. Oh, it's worth it, but you'll absolutely not see its value right away. It's a very quirky duck that will take getting used to, but you will at some point, and you'll have an aha moment. I want to help you get started with very, very, very basic overview of the top platforms that are good for coaches to consider. So on the following page, I have a table that shows the platform who should use it, the demographic that finds it especially appealing, what to share, and how frequently to post. Now, the especially appealing column is, of course, another gross generalization. I'm very much hyper-focused. Clearly, a wider range of people use each of these platforms than what I've listed here. I'm just pointing out those that are especially interested, the demographic that's especially pertinent for. So we start with Twitter, our platform Twitter, and who should use it, which is most businesses and individuals, as a matter of fact, but I will especially say authors, speakers, and real estate agents. Real estate agents are there like crazy. Authors are there like crazy, and they sell their books there like crazy. So if you've written an ebook or a book, you might want to consider Twitter at some point. It's especially appealing to urban residents, African Americans ages 18 to 29 are just living there at this point. If that's your demographic, this is a good idea. The average age of the user is 30. What to share? Share links to your blog posts, links to your Facebook page, links to articles that you like, quotes from people that you admire with words that you believe in, questions to prompt engagement, retweet other people's tweets. If they've said something you like, click the retweet button. Reply to what people have said. Use hashtags and memes, which are little pictures with sayings on them. And post a high volume of posts, anywhere from a 10 to 100. The shelf life of a tweet is just about nothing. So you can really get away with tweeting and tweeting and tweeting your brains out, unlike other networks where if you overpost on LinkedIn, people will not follow you because it'll annoy them. If you overpost on Facebook, it's the same thing. People will unlike your page so that you're not in the newsfeed anymore if you annoy them. So it does matter how much you post. Moving on to Facebook, I would say that most businesses and individuals should use it, especially if your target is over 50. As I said, that's a growing demographic. It's especially appealing to women. It's especially appealing to people 50 plus. You should share links, quotes, questions, memes, ads, and images, and post about 2 to 3 times per day. Now, these are not hard and fast. You can always break these rules, but this is just generally speaking. LinkedIn is great for businesses, especially business to business, for recruiters, job seekers. It's especially men reaching out to men in business. It's especially appealing to men, as I mentioned, and white-collar professionals. And share job posting, company descriptions, employer-employee research. LinkedIn is a all-business kind of a network. It's not the same as Facebook in that you're not going to share about your family picnic on LinkedIn like you would on your business Facebook page. It's just a different animal. So you're going to stick to business on LinkedIn and plan to post 2 to 4 times a week and notice the difference between LinkedIn and Facebook, 2 to 4 times per week versus 2 to 3 times per day on Facebook. It's just a different group of people doing business differently. And interestingly to note, and we'll get to this in a second too, LinkedIn is best to post after business hours because people often at work, their LinkedIn page is blocked at work. They can't log into it. They can't log into any social network at work. And many people who are working 9 to 5 just don't anyway. They've got work to do. So your best bet is to post after business hours. That's when LinkedIn gets the most traffic. Facebook, it's all through the day, but so that's a little different than LinkedIn. Google Plus, who should use it? It's brands already on the other social networks, B2B networkers, especially bloggers. So if you're going to blog, this might be a platform to add down the road. It's especially appealing to brands and individuals 25 to 34 years of age. You want to share hashtags on Google Plus. That's the little pound symbol, and what that does is sort topics for people who are searching for things specifically. So if you're writing on young mothers that you're wanting to coach, you might find that you're writing on a topic specific to young mothers. You put a hashtag before that topic. and then put your posts as you normally would. You'll post links and memes and quotes and images on Google Plus just about like everywhere else, once to twice per day. YouTube, we're all familiar with. The persons who should use it would be brands with video content and anyone giving explanations or sharing expertise or posting how-to videos. And yes, this can be you, especially if you are also a public speaker and you're good at this. You can give quick two-minute video vignettes of how-tos, relationship tips, or if you're a financial coach, finance tips. Little two-minute videos on a YouTube channel can go a very long way for your business. It's especially appealing to a wide demographic, especially teens, but I would say if you are a public speaker and if you're good at that, you should consider this in your future as something that could turn into a super good thing for your business. What to share? Short content videos, less than 2 minutes. How-to instructional videos. It is important to keep your videos short. We all know exactly how we view YouTube. Everybody on this call has probably viewed a YouTube video. So you want to know it's got to be kept pretty short to keep attention. Pinterest is good for anyone in the fashion industry, food, design, travel, or do-it-yourselfers. Of course, like I said, women, young moms, and women over 50 are a growing demographic on Pinterest. Pinterest is primarily visual content. It's not exclusively that, but it is primarily visual content. Lots and lots of memes, pretty pictures, sayings, quotes. People post generally 2 to 3 times today, per day. When you post is important. I mentioned this just a second ago. And on the following page, page 6, I have what's called the dead zone. These are the times that are worst for posting. I'm not going to read through it other than to say that you'll notice that it says Facebook from 12 to 8 a.m. is bad for posting. I have not found that to necessarily be true all the time, but I have found that morning times work pretty well. A lot of people check their Facebook pages in the morning. But other than that, just keep this as a reference point for going forward. And just as another one of those warnings, I'll say this. You kind of have to check these things about every 6 months or so because these dead zones change. This time last year, this was not the same list or same timing. People do research on this all the time, and this is the most up-to-date that I've found, but it does change. So, okay, so before we get into this next part of this module, which is one of the most important aspects, I want to open this last section up to questions. If anyone has anything they'd like to ask specifically about any of these networks, go ahead and unmute and give me a shout here, and I'll see if I can answer.
Tracy, this is Amy. I think we missed this on the last go-around. If they want to unmute themselves, they can press *6, and if you do that, please do it again when you're done asking your question, just in case you have any background noise.
Thank you so much for that reminder. I've forgotten that's pretty important.
No problem.
Tracy, I have a question.
Okay.
I have a question. I have a question. This is very basic, so I apologize for that, but I've not posted from a business perspective before. So when you post on Facebook, I'm going to get a different ID that is a more professional ID and just post tips or points. Is that what I would do? Just kind of post on my ID under Facebook? I feel a little ignorant, but...
Oh, that's okay, and I'm glad that you asked this question. And I do have a reference, bit of reference at the end of this PDF on this, so just remember to look at this at the end. But to answer your question, if you're already using Facebook, you're probably using, and you're not using it for business app, you're probably just using a personal profile Facebook page where you just add friends. You add them, they add you, and you talk back and forth, and you meet up with people and what have you. What you want to do for your business is create a business page. That is a separate page that you manage. You don't have to worry about IDs or anything like that. You just simply click on create a page, and you follow the prompts that Facebook will give you. And it really is very simple, and they walk you through step by step, and within 10 minutes time, you have a Facebook page. I have the link for where to create a Facebook page at the end of this PDF. It's also on your Facebook profile. I believe it's up in the upper right-hand corner where it says create a page. But you can use the link I have here on this PDF.
So is it going to be the same thing as my personal? Like if I post personal, it'll go on the business page as well, or will it be really separate?
No, it is separate.
So it's different connections as well, different people. And...
Right, because on a business page, people have to like your business page. They don't become your friends there. They like you. It's like they're becoming a fan of your page. It's what we used to call a fan page before they changed it to like. So now what you're going to have is a business page, and at the top you're going to want to create a banner that is specifically about your coaching practice. And I'm going to go way deep into Facebook in another module, and this will interest an awful lot of people who want to go the Facebook route. But when you create this page, it will be a standalone page. People do not have to be your friend in order to like this page. People can come from anywhere from Facebook and find you and like the page and become and start interacting with you there. And what you post on your business page does not get posted on your profile page, and you can keep them entirely separate. You could have your clients all go like your Facebook business page, but not necessarily be friends with them on your personal page if you wanted to keep it that separate. So, yes, they live separately. You post separately. You can post the same stuff on those pages, but it would be my advice to keep your business page separate and your profile page personal, and post all about your coaching practice on your coaching practice business page, and keep your personal Facebook page the way you've always done it. Interact with your family and your friends the way you always have. And every now and then, post a link on your personal page to your new business page and invite your friends to like your business page. But you don't have to cross over any further than that if you don't want to.
Okay, so one last question on that. People find my business page because they can do searches in Facebook, or there's some other way that people would be pointed to it?
Well, there'd be a number of ways. People can do a Google search and find you that way. I often find people by Googling your name and then I put the word Facebook after it, and it takes me to their Facebook page. And people can do the same thing with your business page. If you have a website, you'll want to add your Facebook badge. They can find it that way. They can find it because you can invite everybody on your personal friends list to go like your new business page, which I would suggest for people to do. I mean, you may pick and choose certain people from your like your friends list, but I would suggest that you do that. Take as many as you think it would be appropriate. You can also send an email to invite people. You can, for your business signature on your business emails, I would suggest putting a link to Facebook page in your email signature so that it's on every email that you send out. And, of course, telling people about it is always effective, and along with putting a Facebook badge on your business card, that just the icon alone tells them you're on Facebook, so they need to go find you.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Are there any other questions before we move on?
I have a question, yes. With regard to the posting frequency, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Because like 2 to 3 times a day seems like a lot to me. I can't, I have a hard time imagining myself being sort of that attached to that tied to my Facebook page throughout the day. Is there any downside to just posting like once a day or, something less than the recommended frequency? Does that work against you? Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I do, and it's an awesome question, and I'm going to answer it 2 different ways. But the first part, I'm going to say this. I think you need to be posting 2 or 3 times a day because you really don't want to get lost in somebody's news feed, and that can happen. Now, people do scroll back, and they go only so far, though. So posting 2 or 3 times a day kind of keeps you front and center. But I understand the burden. I understand it very, very well. And here's where I suggest to people to use the benefit of Facebook scheduling. When you open a Facebook page, I cannot for the life of me remember if there's a number of likers you have to have before you can utilize this function. But you can schedule posts in the future. So that if you sit down at the beginning of every month and sort of come up with your own idea of an editorial calendar of sorts, of posts that you know you want to post, you can go into Facebook and set them up to automatically post when you want them to, time of day, on the day that you want them to, so that you can set up and forget it and then just check in once a day on your Facebook page to see if anybody has commented on the post that you've made. This way you're doing it all at once. So,
okay.
It's, you know, it's a couple hours a month that you sit down and schedule out what you want to do and get them all set up on Facebook.
That sounds great, but I guess the one other thing I'm not understanding is when you say posting 2 to 3 times per day, is that because I'm not savvy with this yet, does that mean you're posting the same thing several times throughout the day, or are those different content 2 or 3 times a day?
Yes, it's different content. And one of the things that I do, partly because it's easy and the other part is because it's effective, is that it's kind of hard to do the brain work to squeeze out fresh content that you think is pertinent and relative out of your own brain all the time. And to the tune of 2 to 3 times a day is a bit much. And this is why when you find an article that you like online, you want to save that link because you can use that as one of your posts on Facebook. If you've got somebody that you admire or a bunch of people you admire, you can find quotes from them and simply post a quote and their name beside it. That's it. That's your post. You can post images or memes, which are pretty little images with statements or quotes on them, or post a thoughtful question. It doesn't have to be long. You know enough about Facebook if you use your personal page to know that it doesn't have to be more than a sentence or two, a short question. But links to other places is a legitimate post, and it gets attention on your page, and it also gives good information. So if you particularly like a certain writer and you read that person online all the time, post links to their articles. Eventually, when you start blogging, which we're going to get into in a minute, that I hope you'll start doing, you'll be posting links to your own blog. But here's another thing, is don't tax yourself. If 2 or 3 is too much, start with 1 a day and try to work up and use the scheduling advantage on Facebook and see if that works for you and then begin increasing it as you get the hang of it.
Thanks. That's really helpful. Yes, very much.
Okay.
Thanks.
Great. Okay, if there's not any others, we'll move on because it's already 9:45 and I haven't even touched blogging yet. So we're going to hop into that unless you interrupt me right now. Okay, so keeping your four-pronged approach front and center, and I just want to remind you of it because it is the bottom line here on page 7 of your PDF. If you don't have a website, you need one. If you don't use a social platform, pick one. If you don't have a blog on your website, get one. If you don't have a mailing list, start one. Just get started. Do not wait until you have everything in perfect order to start because you'll never start. Your website will never be perfect. Your Facebook page will never be 100% what you want. And you'll never understand all the moving parts completely, and they'll change anyway even if you do figure it all out. There will always be stuff about every social network that you won't fully understand, so just get started. So with that in mind, I want to focus on 2 of this approach, and it is blogging. I get this question absolutely all the time. Why is blogging so important? And it comes down to your audiences. On page 8, I have a goofy little picture that tells you exactly who your audiences are. And I hope you're giggling when you look at this because I drew that spider all by myself. So you're looking at your two audiences, your human readers, which, of course, are where the rubber meets the road, and search engine spiders. And this is important. Don't tune out. I know you're going to want to, but don't, because it is important. Your human readers, I'm not going to go into why that's important because it's obvious. You don't need me to tell you that your peeps are it. They're the bottom line, so I'm skipping that. We're going to talk about spiders for a second. To find information on the hundreds of millions of website pages that exist, a search engine employs special software called spiders. It's a robot called a spider. And these spiders build lists of the words that it finds on websites. When a spider is building its list, the process is called web crawling. You and I go to the internet all the time searching for information, and we do this by typing in specific keywords in a search engine like Google or Bing or Yahoo. And the results that we get happen because those search engine spiders crawl countless websites, millions, to try to deliver to us the information that we're looking for. So turn to the next page. I'm just going to give you the quick anatomy of a page. You've seen these pages a bazillion times when you've done search online, but I want to break it down for you just real quickly. Up there in the top left, you saw what I searched for, women's shoes size 6. Don't worry about reading all this. I just want you to get the anatomy. In the big red circle, those are all paid ads. The company that you see represented there, they bought those top spots so that when you did a search for women's size 6 shoes, that you would see them first above everybody else. And they paid a lot of money for those spots. In the square, in the bottom left square, this is where your website or my website is likely to end up. The results in that box are the organic search results. So unless you purchase an ad like these big dog companies did, you're going to end up somewhere in these organic results. And look, organic results are great so long as you're not on page 2,876. So getting to page 1 is tough to do, and there's a whole lot that goes into it, obviously tons more than I could cover here. One of the many factors that determine where any given website falls on the search engine results page is keywords that tell spiders what a website is all about so that they can return those results quickly to searchers. Website pages all have keywords in their content and keywords in the titles of their pages, and so do blog posts. So what you're doing when you publish a blog post is you're providing new, fresh content for spiders to crawl that goes beyond just the pages of your website, because most pages of your website sit static for months or even years at a time, which will bore spiders to tears. They love this fresh new content to give to searchers. So anything never before seen online will make a spider quite happy and earn you some Google or Bing or Yahoo favor. So the use of keywords is an involved topic. I'm going to touch on it because it's important and it's a part of blogging, and it's why you need to blog. Even if you're just starting out, you can begin using keywords strategically without getting caught up in the complicated stuff, and I'm going to tell you how. Your starting point is to determine what your blog overall is about. Now, I'm going to assume that you're either blogging or by the time I'm done talking, you'll want to, because it's that important. These keywords are going to be in individual blog posts, and they're going to also be on your entire blog page. So when we're talking about starting a blog, we want to think about your blog page overall and what it's going to be about, because you've got to remain true to the purpose of your blog so you don't confuse spiders with keywords that are all over the place. You don't want to have a blog about relationship coaching and then do a bunch of posts on women's size 6 shoes. It makes no sense, and the search engine spiders won't know what to do with you. Now, I made a huge gap there to illustrate the point. The gap could be much smaller and still confuse the spider. So that's why I want you, when you're thinking about creating a blog page overall, to know what it is your coaching practice is about and remain true to it. So let's use, as an example, let's say you're a relationship coach. Maybe your expertise is in marriage, remarriage, and blended families. Okay, so your entire blog should be dedicated to those focus areas, marriage, remarriage, and blended families. So you're going to be writing blog articles on those three topics. You don't want to stray off those topics to financial coaching or shoes or anything else, like I said. You want to maintain the integrity of your relationship coaching website by staying on topic on your blog page. This is going to help your page rank, and it's going to help those spiders know what to do with you. So once you've defined your blog page overall, then you begin coming up with topics that fall into that niche area. This is where we start to drill down and use strategic keywords. So let's say you want to write this week on something within the blended family category. Well, this is an excellent topic, but it's much too big to cover in one blog post. And besides, you're going to need lots of topics in order to keep your blog pumping out good quality, relevant new information. So you don't want to spend it all on just one blog post. So you need to hyper-focus your ideas for every single blog post, and this can be a struggle, but not so much if you follow my advice. You can use keyword research tools like ubersuggest.org. Now, ubersuggest, I have the link at the very end of this PDF, so don't worry about trying to remember it. Ubersuggest keywordideas.org is a site that generates more keyword ideas based on what people are already searching for online. So these aren't just random words they're throwing together because they sound good. This is based on what they've already gotten search hits for. So as you write on topics you already know that people are looking for, you're much more likely to generate organic traffic because you're already putting out what people want. So on the next page, it's page 10 of your PDF document. I provided a screenshot of UberSuggest. And I've also included that link there in the PDF, and it's also at the very end of the PDF. Now, I know that this screenshot is small. Don't worry about being able to read it really well. I'm going to read the part to you that I want you to see. And then on the next page, I've done a little closer-up shot so you can see it even a little bit better. But up there in the upper right is the search bar. It's like any other search bar. You put your terms that you want to use. You want to write, I put in blended family, because we want to do a blog post on blended family. So immediately, it sorts for me. The results are sorted alphabetically, and it also gives me an original quick synopsis of quick terms before it goes into breaking it down alphabetically. So what you see there then is my original search term, which was blended family, and then towards the bottom, this is a list of a bunch of ideas that it gives. I know you can't see it. It's too small. So I want you to turn to 11 and let me show you this drill down. This drill down list are the terms that we know people are searching for. I clicked on blended family problems because it interested me. Maybe I want to write a blog post on that. Underneath blended family problems, you can see a whole host of things. Each one can be its own blog post. And the thing is that's just the tip of the iceberg here. We haven't even touched the letter A. This is just the basic quick results that I got from blended family. When you go to A, it starts with blended family, and then it starts with the letter A and whatever goes with blended family that people have been searching for. Again, the beauty is these word combinations are already being searched online. We already know people want to know about these topics. This is a beautiful tool for you to use when writing blog posts. And you know what? The topics are endless. They really are just about endless. There's another cool tool that I love to suggest. It's along with UberSuggest, it's similar to UberSuggest. It tells you the approximate number of people that are searching for the terms, not just the terms itself, and that's pretty cool. So you can see, are there 2 people searching per month for this or 20,000 people searching per month for this? And that search tool is called SEObook.com. Again, it's at the bottom of this PDF, SEObook.com. I've included a link so that you can use that as a resource tool and you don't have to worry about remembering it. But it gives you a breakdown of just how many people are looking for a term. And it also gives you terms very similar to what UberSuggest does to generate ideas. Now, here's the thing. Whether you realize it or not, when you're writing a blog article, you're already using keywords. It's just a question of whether you're using the right ones or not. Because the spider's going to crawl it whether you've done it masterfully or not. So the point is you want to be sure that within these blog posts, you're using keywords that people are searching for, and this is one way that you do it. So some practical points are this. When you're writing a blog post, put those keywords in the title if possible. If you're writing on blended families, but you drill down, as I'm suggesting you do, to, for instance, blended family problems jealousy, title it, if you can, blended family problems, : jealousy, or dealing with jealousy, because you've got your keywords in it. Also include those keywords in the opening paragraph somewhere and then throughout the article naturally. Now, it's important for you to not force these keywords in there where they don't belong. That's known as keyword stuffing, and you'll get a smack for that, and it could really damage your page rank. So don't do it. Just use keywords naturally. Put them where they belong in your post, where they naturally fit. Use them as often as you can, as naturally as they come. So on the next page, I just want to give you the brief synopsis of what blogging does for you. Blogging gives you the opportunity to provide spiders with more keywords to crawl so your website can rank higher over time. Blogging gives you the opportunity to provide human readers with quality information to read and to share. And blogging gives you the opportunity to provide more chances to be found online because you've used more keywords and more places for spiders to find. And if you also use links to other reputable websites, spiders know that as a quality source of information, which improves your page rank as well. And if you can get quality websites to link to your website, that's even better. Now, backlinking is a huge other topic of great depth. So the starting point is that to know this, links that go out from your site to quality websites and links that come to your site from quality websites is extremely good for your website performance in terms of online credibility with Google and other search engines. So linking is something that you'll want to do. And like I said, I'm going to dig deeper into blogging in future modules, or you can consult with me about it. It's not anything to worry about. It's just something to learn about. So I'm mentioning it now as a starting point. Google and other search engines are committed to providing quality search results to all of us internet users, and spiders is how they do that, and also how often you're clicked on by your human readers. The more clicks you get and the longer people stay on your website, the more it speaks to Google and other search engines that you're a really great site, and they do take notice of it, and it does affect your page rank. So let's see. I want to go ahead and move on to sharing because that's what I just touched on. Sharing is critical with social media, thus the term social, and I really can't say enough about the importance of sharing. When people post a comment on one of your blog articles, when they share one of your articles on Facebook, or link back to your website from one of their sites, this all communicates to spiders that you're really hot stuff. This is online street cred, and it increases your page rank. Over time, you'll begin to see your website climb through the search engine result pages, maybe even to page one. Now, it's not going to happen overnight, but the more quality content you put out there and the more it's shared, the more your page rank will improve. So I want to share some very, very practical advice that works for increasing your page rank, and it's on page 13. Boy, this is really practical stuff, so I hope that it is speaking to you. Once you begin to generate content on a blog page, you can ask your family and friends as a starting point to share your content. Ask them to tweet links to your blog posts and website pages if they use Twitter. Ask them to click the social share button, like Dig, Reddit, StumbledUpon, Tumblr, and Pinterest. Those social share buttons can be incorporated into your website, and they're one click of a button away from sharing your content. You can ask them to post links on their Facebook page that take them back to your blog post, or they can just click the share button on Facebook and share from your Facebook page. They can suggest your Facebook page to their friends, invite them to come like it. They can post comments on your blog post on your website, and they can post comments on your Facebook post. Essentially, ask your peeps to share your content and engage with you on every network that they use. Ask them to commit to you to do it for a block of time, like 6 weeks or 10 weeks or longer if you can swing it, even if they just concentrate and do this for you for a week or two. That's going to be helpful. The more your pages are clicked from various IP addresses all over the place, the more those spiders sit up and pay attention to your site. Like I said, there are numerous factors for why your site gets found over someone else's website. But number of clicks on your page and the amount of time people spend on your website and the amount of sharing of your page and your links, just like keywords, are all a part of the equation. It all comes together to affect your page rank. So I'm about to open this part up to questions, but before I do that, I have to add this. It's a be patient reminder because building your presence online really takes time. And I don't have to tell people like you that trust does not happen overnight. And you already know it as coaches that it's a privilege to be trusted, and it takes time to build that trust. Well, it takes even more so online. But that's what you're doing when you give good quality, reliable information away by blogging or posting it on Facebook or other social networks. Over time, you build trust that you are a place to go for good information, and your human following will take notice, and so will the search engine spiders. And yes, we can be talking about months or even a year or more for this to start to really take hold. But, you know, the next several years are going to go by anyway, so why not be establishing yourself as a credible source for information online? So, look, that was a crash on blogging, and I know that it's a lot, and there's a whole lot to know, especially if you're just starting out. So let's open up for questions about blogging, and then we'll cover the very last little bit of this PDF, which is really just resources for you. So if you have any questions, remember to unmute, which I think was star 6, and go ahead and fire away, and I'll see what I can do to answer your questions. So I've overwhelmed you, and that's okay. I want to suggest that if you've not started a blog page, that that's okay. If you have a website, then you probably have everything you need for a blog page to be added. You can either add it yourself or have the person who built your website add it for you. But the thing that you can begin doing right away is you can begin making a list of things that you know you want to blog about. You can begin doing keyword research, like what I using tools I just showed you, because this will help to generate some ideas. I do have a couple of questions that were sent to me ahead of time, and so I'm just going to read a couple of these, and you can feel free to interrupt at any point in time. So let's see. How can I use social media to its highest good without getting caught up in this vortex? That's from Bev, and I really get this one. Because I'm in the business, I'm in the vortex. My best advice to anyone is to go ahead and set aside a predetermined amount of time per day or per week that you can and are willing to dedicate to social media, and then turn it off. Be determined to limit your time on your Facebook page. You can do this by creating an editorial calendar, as I mentioned earlier, at the beginning of the month, and knock it out in an hour and go ahead and schedule your posts. And then all you're doing is checking on them once a day, if even not. Another topic was, what about dealing with taboo topics like sex addiction? What about sensitivities like that? Well, this is a really great question. I'm glad it was Bryant who asked this question. I'm not sure if you're here this evening, but my suggestion for that, I had a client who had a similar issue with a drug addiction, and it was my determination that Facebook really wasn't the place for that. People, first of all, do not go to Facebook anonymously, and for issues like a sex addiction, they're going to want to protect their anonymity. Anybody would. Twitter would be a much better outlet, because a person can create any fictitious Twitter name. They can keep everything about it private if they want and still interact openly with you as openly as they want to on Twitter. Now, yeah, the whole world can see those posts. It's true. But you can also make connections there by sending links or requests. You can send a direct message that's private that no one else can see and post links to your blog page, so that a person can get there without the whole world knowing that they're a part of that group. So I would say Twitter would be a really great social network for somebody who's dealing with something that's especially sensitive. Mickey asked, the days of good old-fashioned face-to-face are near extinct. So when is social media too much? Well, one reason why I wanted to address this question is because the bottom line for coaches, as you well know, this is all about making connections with people. So when it comes to social media, really what you're best finding here is that it's a great way to connect people, but it's a really inexpensive form of advertising in itself. Meaningful connections can be made there, They'll never replace face-to-face or a phone call, and you'll always want to do that, but your coaches, you know all that stuff. The important thing to note here is that people are looking by using social media for people doing exactly what you're doing. So if people are looking for you and not finding you on social media, then you're missing an opportunity to be found. It may not be your wheelhouse. It may not really be what you want, but that doesn't change the fact that an awful lot of people are looking for you there. So why not be found there? And the best thing that you could do is go ahead and start a Facebook page and begin interacting to the degree that you're comfortable. Add a badge to your website so people can find you there, and add that link to your email signature so people can find you there, and just start using it, see how you feel about it. And that would be my best suggestion for that. Now, at the end of your PDF, wind this up because we're over time. The end of your PDF, I have a checklist of things for you to consider. You can read that later, and a couple of tips, things like join Facebook groups and join online forums. There are also links to SEObook.com and ubersuggest.org, and a link to my consultation page if you want to meet with me one-on-one to walk through things and talk about your specific questions, concerns, or needs. You can contact me by way of that link. So I have enjoyed this tonight, and if you do have any questions, I'm going to stick around here just for a couple more minutes. Otherwise, thank you so much for being here tonight. I hope you found this useful. Please let me know if you did by emailing me, or if you have any questions, you can email me, or if something was just not clear, let me know. If something was missing, I'd sure like to know about it. Thanks again for being here, guys. I really do appreciate it.